Well, my first question for you, Wyke, is what is Helloween doing right now? Obviously, we have a new album out that came out a couple months that's coming out. And now, talk a bit about the new record, what the band's up to.
Well, we've done that Loud Park festival in Japan. We played in front of 20,000 people in the Saitama Super Stadium, which is a hall. It's like a multi-purpose hall. And then, well, we rehearsed like 2 weeks in order to not fuck the whole thing up. And we just got there and played right and had a good time. And obviously that made a very important impact in that area. And so we just flew in there for one day and then played on the next day and got out of there on the day after. It was incredible. And then we are preparing for the next festival in Karlsruhe in Germany. That's going to take place on the 15th of December. That's called, I don't know, can you look it up for me later? it's called Knock Off or something, or Knock Out Festival. Then there's going to be that cruise, the 70,000 tons of metal, or what it's called, in January, eventually, during which we're going to absolve two shows, and then go back and get ready for the regular tour that's going to start on the 28th of February, as far as I know.
Okay.
If the world didn't end in between.
Now, one of the things that was really difficult for me to determine, and I've known you guys for a very, very long time, and usually when you put a record out, like, I usually am able to pick out, oh, I know Andy wrote that song, or I know Marcus wrote that song, or I know that you wrote a song. And I'm usually able to pick out who wrote what without even looking at the songwriting credits, because every person in the band has a distinct style. And this record, it was really difficult. There were songs I thought Andy wrote that Sasha wrote, and there were songs I thought you wrote that Marcus wrote. And I think it's very interesting that it was that hard for me to determine this. And, you know, does it mean you guys as a band have really gelled? How has this happened?
Yeah, that's probably some kind of consolidation that took place along the way. And I don't actually know when that happened, but it's a loop of how to approach work in the band and how to get prepared for events and stuff. What certainly helped was the decision to not do any rehearsal room sessions, you know, for an album, because that's taking a lot private time from you and everyone at the same time. You're trying to get prepared for an album, but then you may as well take the demos and the single tracks and rehearse it at home and then have it ready when it's time to enter the studio, and then everybody gets in there and plays his part. And that's a big time saver, actually, I must say. And also this way you circumvent stupid discussions, or if there's a bad mood on some day, if the magic is not right, you know, then usually everybody's pretty set on bringing up ideas and stuff, and then there's a lot of misunderstandings and whatever. And if you do it that way, you know, just work out the demos and rehearse the parts that are in there, you can't possibly get into that situation. So nothing can go wrong there, which is always like it's trouble prone, you know, those things. No matter how you want to approach it, and this is a step that we actually skipped since the Dark Ride. We tried to do band rehearsals in a room for an album for the Rabbit Don't Come Easy, and then for the one after, and for the Keeper 3. And that didn't work out too well, because, like, the older you get, you know, the more you actually prefer staying home and be at your own place, be on yourself, or being able to do what you want to do, and then, you know, actually band activities apart from the usual stuff that you need to do, like rehearsals for a tour, you know what you have to rehearse. No discussion has to take place, you know, in order to come up with a creative process. And so that dangerous part, get, because we're very well able to come up with brilliant albums a different way, and so that's very enjoyable, and so that also maybe keeps the sanity in the band, could be, you know. So you have no reason to get upset about anything because you skip that step.
Now, a guy in the band that really, in my opinion, never really gets a lot of credit because obviously he's newer, even though he's been in the band almost 10 years, he's a newer member of the band, but he never really gets a lot of credit for a lot of great songs that he writes. And I want to talk about Sasha Gerstner because he has, in my opinion, really solidified this lineup since joining, even with some of the songs on Rabbit Don't Come Easy. And how big of an impact has Sasha really had on you guys as a band? And, you know, as a person, as a songwriter, how big of an impact has he had on Helloween over the last, say, like 10 years?
Well, I mean, he's very interested in social structures, yeah, not in the way that we talk social on social networks and stuff. Yeah, he's interested in that too, but he keeps it to a minimum. No, he's interested in social structures and a personal framework inside a band, because he lived through a few bands before that he had, projects or Freedom Call or other things, you know, where he witnessed certain things, and he is just extremely interested in, well, consolidating things and letting things flow, trying to optimize things. That's what he's interested in, and so he comes up with ideas, you know, for the good or the better or the worse, rather not. It's just, you know, that sometimes that it appeared to be like annoying in a way, but then usually he always has a point to it, you know, when he mentions something that he wants to change, or then usually, you know, we have good discussions or good decisions about those things, you know. If there were no one, you know, bringing up these points, you know, it would have been me in the past, and so I always got the trouble when there was something to decide or to optimize or whatever, and it's just meant well, you know, it's meant a good way. And usually, you know, bands tend to be lazy or too comfy with themselves, and then you don't want to think about things that, you know, that are necessary to do or to do things better, you know. And so that usually takes some thinking over things, and sometimes you don't really always want to think things over. But with these persons that we have in the band right now, the band members that we have, well, some process took place there that we got to understand each other a lot better, and then you take it on from there, and somehow the things run a lot more smooth when you get to know each other well, and you know what the other means, and then you have some, you know, some mental tools to get close to what the other wants to say, and then you come to a conclusion, and that's also enjoyable if you know how to do it. And, you know, there's actually bands who will never achieve that. They will just always get against each other, you know. And so I think we found a good way of preparing things, getting prepared, do this, do that, and also, you know, with the management we have, predominantly, you may say, that's a case of trust, you know, that there's good reasons for things to do, and not just, you know, to annoy you or give you a hard time or something. There's always usually a good reason for something that they want us to do or that we have to do or whatever. And so that's a good framework we're all in, and it seems to work out more and more, you know, the longer we try. And the more we deal with each other, which I think is a great process, and you also get to feel it, you sense something is going into the right direction. Somehow things seem to be working out, which is also new for this band. Yeah, so like we exist in this form since about 10 years, and somehow there's some center of peace, you know, that remains, or that's emanating from somewhere that sense, and then you think, hey, you know, things turn out to run smooth, which has never ever been the case before, so why is that? And then maybe you calm down and enjoy, you know, the way things are running, could be, you know. And I think he's also, like, very responsible for that process, you know, that he initiated it in a way, and then, you know, the others close in on that whole thing and take it with them as well, and then it starts working from a certain point on.
Well, Wyke, you got a couple songs on here, obviously. The song Years, which was actually pretty easy for me to figure out that you wrote that track. However, Burning Sun, to me, just doesn't sound like something you would normally write. And, you know, of course, things always surprise me on records. This album really surprised me with that. And let's talk about the two songs you wrote. What are they about? And the concept behind them. And just talk about both the tracks you wrote for this album.
Mm-hmm. Well, that Burning Sun is about a lunatic who holds a grudge to all this world. He's not interested in the real world, and he's living in a fantasy world, and he's maybe surfing the YouTube pages about theories and aliens and spaceships and stuff, and he just wants to be the helmsman of a starship, go to the sun and just watch it fluctuate, you know, and just be there, and that's his big dream. And so he's living on a cloud, as is said in the lyrics, and then you can nudge him and ask him what it's like. And he's living in his own fantasy world, and there's he's a hard case, you know. Actually, there's many of those kind of people around us who have their own particular dream world in which they live, and it's hard to get them out of there or get them into the actual world and function, you know. With all these social networks that we have nowadays, you know, it's possible for everyone to live in a dream world and remain there. And the Years is just a very simple thought. It's just basically, you know, it's time that's running, and then you're in a given amount of time, and that's where your life is, and basically you get born, then you do a little bit during your life, whether it's something constructive or not. You share your part that you give to this world or whatever, and then basically you die. And then there's just a few hints or well-meant tips from my side where I say, like, when you grow up and when you lead your life, you know, yeah, try to not end up in pigeonholes, you know, that may make your life unpleasant, and try to preview that, you know, or foresee whatever could happen to you that could be bad, of which you later on maybe won't get out of it if you don't take a close look beforehand, because that's what I think is what happens in life. You tend to run into little traps, and then you don't know how to get out of it. So it's a good idea, you know, to think about it a bit before. Then that makes life easier, possibly, and then you can deal with better people. You have a better life quality or something, if you think of those things. And that's basically all that's in the lyrics of Years.
Well, the new album's entitled Straight Out of Hell, which kind of sounds a little bit cynical, but at the same time, you know, this record has a more positive vibe to the music. And talk about the concept behind the title of the album, and talk a bit about the musical direction of this record and how you came up with it and stuff like that.
Well, first of all, it was in correlation with these end-of-the-world rumors that take place, like on the 21st of December, the world's going to end, Mayan calendar, Nibiru planet that's going to cross by and crush us and stuff, and whatever is going to take place or not, we thought that could be a cool album title in correlation to it. If you say Step Out of Hell, Straight Out of Hell, it's like, you know, we made it. Nothing happened. We maybe survived. Anything that was supposed to expected to happen, and then you're still there, and so we escaped it. And that's a good thing, straight out of hell. Mm-hmm. So if hell was going on, then you survived it, which is a positive thing, and then you can rejoice and go like, hey, we survived it, nothing happened. And now you've got a new Halloween album. And then that's what the basic idea for that was. So it's not really meant cynical or anything. Just kind of bland, stupid in a way. Now, hey, no catastrophe, fine. Out of hell, new Halloween record, here you go. Kind of like that. And Charlie Bauerfeind, the producer, he also said beforehand, before we did that, he would like to approach it a different way as well, because, you know, there's all these gothic, dark, and whatever momentums playing into reality right now, wherever you go. What struck me as odd was like these flooded subway system tunnels or walkways underneath in New York, you know, after Sandy. You know, that in the public, in public places, you know, you have all those eerie Tim Burton-esque, you know, pictures, images, whatever, you know, everything is gray, evil, eerie, dark. That's really strange, you know, and you have that so much in public places nowadays. Just compare that to some stuff in the 70s, how things used to look like, you know, when they did their LSD and drug cartoon pictures on walls, you know, like colorful, wild, crazy, and usually quite positive, I think. Like, colorful is always, like, better than gray and dark and, you know, as I said, that Tim Burton kind of stuff is spreading so much all throughout reality in the Western world. And maybe in the Eastern world, I don't know, but I haven't seen so much of that, you know. Sometimes it's enough to take a look at the buildings that you get to see, but then, you know, I just thought, like, why is this spreading so much? Why is this so in and so hip, you know, to surround yourself with grayish, dark things? And Charlie, he also has enough of those things in a way, so he said he wants to approach the whole thing a lot more positive, with shiny chords and big time choirs, good sounding frequencies, and let everything be a bit more bright and positive, along with the modern stylistics that we use nowadays and what we do in songwriting, whatever. He just said he'd like to take an approach that's more similar to what maybe we did in the past when Halloween was like real famous and came up with all these new directions. Incorporate that typical Halloween trademark stuff into the new production. And naturally nobody disagreed. And now you're there with like a lot of variety. At something of everything and not just necessarily limited on one. Like when we did the Seven Sinners supposedly was to be brutal and direct and you know that's tongue in cheek naturally, but we just wanted to be so heavy and go like, look at how bad and how heavy and well badass we can be, and tongue in cheek though. And then with this, we just wanted to, well, do something. Collect tracks from the demos and the good material that we had. And so it was easy to pick from those, I don't know, 30 tracks or what it was, the ones that we actually recorded that made it on the record now. And some B-sides and bonus tracks that were pre-selected as well, so that beforehand you would already know, okay, No Eternity would be a B-side, and Shot of Life would be a bonus track. That was clear before the production.
Mm-hmm. Now, in a history of the band, you guys have never used the same producer as long as you have been using Charlie Bauerfeind, and he's almost become like a big factor in the band's sound. I mean, he's just really just a big factor in that, and, you know, making the album sound the way that they do. And Wykie, why have you guys stuck with Charlie for as long as you have?
Yeah, I don't know. It's 'cause a you know, there's a flow, and maybe nobody feels like interrupting the flow. There's been no major incident that Charlie would have to do other things or whatever, because well, a year or 2 years before, he tries to sync his schedule with what's running with Halloween then later on in the future, and when he does his timetables or whatever, there's certainly some space left there for when the next Halloween production will take place and how it's being done and what is needed for that, while obviously he's working on other projects at different times or at the same time. And one thing I wanted to tell is what we used on that album is the so-called Camper amp. I don't know if you ever heard about that device yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's a digital profiling amp that profiles actual vintage amps that you have. Like, you have modern or old amps or very good amps that you like, that you call your own or that you have stored somewhere, and then you run those things and you put two microphones there, and somehow the device is reading the data or the sound or the characteristics of those amps, and you can save it in that device, and then you can play the actual amps afterwards, because then it knows all the characteristics and it's giving you the original sound of those amps that you profiled. And so we used that one for recording this album, and it was actually a device that Sasha found out and wanted to check out with Charlie if it's, you know, if that's a good thing to do or maybe a bad idea or whatever, but well, Charlie checked it and said this is actually a lot better than anything else we could do, so we are going to use this device exclusively all the time. And so they went profiling amps and Marshalls and stuff that we then used for the production, for the very recordings. And those are the signature vintage sounds that you hear on that record.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think sometimes, you know, I had a guitar solo sound, you know, comparable to the very Santana or Gary Moore, and you think, where's this coming from? And now I can play with this. Wow, this is marvelous. What does this feel like? Yeah, and then you play a solo and you go like, this sounds like someone else played it, not me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Strange, but good at the same time. And so there were some magic moments, you know, that actually... It propelled you, you know, to play something more extraordinary or more meaningful or whatever. And at the same time, you had that, you know, desire to do something with that brilliant sound that suddenly you had at your hands and make something out of it. And this is actually what took place the easy way, just so. And sometimes I've been sitting there going like, how is this possible? You're playing something, and now you just recorded something that a minute before you wouldn't have thought possible, but you just did it, you know? And that's what took place a few times, actually. Great.
Now, do you guys plan on coming over here to the States finally, you know, after, because it's been a while since you've come over here. Do you guys plan on coming over here to the States and maybe playing some shows here and there?
Hmm. Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think there's something in the planning. Just nothing is set, but I think it's pretty obvious that, like, some key cities, some key towns, there will be some Halloween shows from what I've been told.
Now, in some of the festivals you guys have been playing and some of the places you've been playing, you know, have you played any of these new songs from this album? Because obviously it's not out yet. But have you played any new songs from the album? And talk about that, you know, any good reception from the new songs if you've played them live?
Oh, pretty good. And then there seems to be a build-up in requests, you know, for us to play more or less or solely or predominantly songs from the Darius era. We got requests from many people. It's building up, you know, many more of these people show up and you know, demand that we skip those tracks from the Q Keeper era and whatever that we play a lot during the concert shows, because we thought that people would demand that. And now there's different generations of Halloween fans who maybe don't care so much about those old things, or they have less of a connection to that stuff, because maybe someone got The Time of the Oath as his first Halloween record, and so he's got a different connection. And I don't know, that demand of changing the actual live set list that we had in the recent years is building up. Now we're trying to react on that, and I don't know if we will do good or whatever, but we sure have that in mind, and we try to get more Darius songs eras. Why do I keep saying area? I don't know. You know, there's no reason to do this. Stupid. And then we have some list of tracks that we hardly ever played or didn't ever play for the next tour, and eventually some will crystallize and will get played, and then I just hope, you know, that then people will be happier or something or whatever. At least we won't play Future World this time around, because Kai Hansen has asked that he can play that with Gamma Ray, and so then there's a slot in there, you know, for a different track. I don't know what's going to be the outcome of things, but mm-hmm. we have already pre-selected a few tracks to be tried.
Yeah. Well, is it difficult for you to pick what songs you want to play with so many records and in a 25, 30-year history? And
yeah, that's always difficult, and there's just one track that I actually don't want to play if I don't have to, and apart from that, I don't really care what else it is, you know, if it's playable. You know, sometimes you can play tracks that go like 160 beats per minute or per second every day, and then, you know, you can execute the drummer later on, or you don't have to because he had executed himself. And, you know, so that's something that you got to keep an eye on, and particularly the pride of drummers, you know, is always like, yeah, I need a few little a certain sportive activities in order to keep me alive. And then afterwards, you know, he says, oh, it's been a little bit much on my knees, maybe. Or maybe I have to cut off one leg because I can't use it anymore. And so those are those things that you have to bear in mind when you want to do a concert show, and then you want to do like 130 shows with that. Mm-hmm. You better go have a look at what you actually are up to do, you know, and so you got to keep it sane. That's absolutely the case, you know, and not go like we're trying to do world records here and then die after 2 weeks, you know. So it's always difficult to make a proper set list that eventually works, that people cherish then when you play it, and so they get out of the venue and say, hey, that's been a marvelous, great, awesome Halloween show. It's not so easy to collect those songs. No, not at all.
Well, I'm obviously running short on time here, Wyke, and I just want to say, do you have anything you want to say to the fans that are going to be checking this interview out on my show?
Yeah, from what I heard so far, you know, the reactions have been very good on this new record. And then, you know, we all feel quite positive and proud about it, and then I just hope that when any of you get to listen to that, you know, that you maybe have the same feel, and maybe you get a, you know, good inspiration for what else you could do that day after you heard it. Maybe put it on again, or tell friends, or whatever. And I feel very good about that whole thing. And so then there's going to be the tours, there's going to be the shows, and well, naturally, we hope everything runs smooth and the world is not going to end, so you can keep all your girlfriends and address books and whatever and all the gadgets and devices that you have that won't work after the end of the world, presumably. So I think everything should just go better, you know, and we should vote for the right presidents, always. And then see where we bring things with that, you know, and what will happen within the next year. And then, yeah, probably back being at the end of a full-filled tour and then think about the next album already and go on from there. And, well, actually, I say I'm against ending the world. I think we should continue in whichever dimension it's going to be, and I just don't want much of a change except for the better. Yeah, and so that's maybe something to ponder on and think about whatever may happen. And that's why we got that new CD. If the world ends, you're not going to listen to it. If the world goes on, then there will be a new Halloween record, and we would congratulate you to the